Notre Dame professor Jeffrey Bergstrand, an expert in international trade and finance at the Mendoza College of Business, discussed with Bill Schmidt of the Office of Public Affairs one of the assignments in this online course, an economic analysis of immigration in the context of globalization and social and moral questions.
Professor Bergstrand, in this article from the Journal of Economic Perspectives, Freeman weighs in on the topic of immigration, which is often dominated in our media by political and social arguments. First, I want to ask, why is this article a useful one for students? And is Freeman's view representative of economists?
I think this is a very good article for students to read along two lines. The first thing is, this is really a survey article, and we're looking for something to give a broad view about the economics of immigration. There's basically four parts to it, and the first part is very descriptive. And one of the emphases in the first part of the article is that immigration is a very global phenomenon. This is not just an issue that concerns U.S. and Mexico relationships and immigrants to the United States from Mexico, as often the press depicts, but immigration is going on globally, and it describes some of those overall trends. And for example, Europe faces a large migration of workers from the Middle East and from Central Europe, and face issues similar to ours. The second thing is that he hits on directly the issues and asks the key questions about why do workers migrate? And then secondly, and a very important one for the current debate, is what's the impact of migration on the native workers, that is the homeborn workers, from immigration? The third issue is he talks about the relationship between international trade and immigration, and these two factors have a very strong relationship and complementarity. And then the fourth thing is he addresses policies in the very last section. So one of the benefits of the article and why it's useful reading is it's a very balanced approach towards a broad brush view of the economics of immigration. The second major aspect why I think it's a very useful article is it really casts a representative economist view of how we view immigration. Immigration is part of the process of globalization. Globalization is very broadly not just trade in goods and services and flows of labor around the world, but it's the increasing interconnectedness of peoples around the world. And what Freeman does is cast immigration as just one of many channels through which globalization is going to continue. And he talks about that in relationship to trade and capital flows as well.
Freeman notes that liberalization of restrictions on the flows of goods and capital across countries have led to a rising tide of economic growth that tends to lift all boats. He argues that the flow of people across national borders is still much more restricted by many countries. Is this true, and why do you think it exists?
I think basically the answer to that is it is true, and let me put this issue in a bit of historical context. The first thing is, as I mentioned a bit in response to the first question, that globalization is a very broad process about increased interconnectedness of peoples around the world. Economists, though, tend to focus on really three channels of that interconnectedness, and economists, international economists, have been studying this for decades. One of those is increased trade in goods and services. The second aspect of globalization we study is capital flows. And the third is immigration flows or migrant flows. And this is the framework that Freeman uses, a very conventional one. Historically, economists, most economists, not all, but most tend to argue for free trade and trying to reduce barriers to international trade, barriers to capital movements around the world, and barriers to migrant flows. We feel that as markets are allowed to move factors and goods around the world, they move to where they're demanded. That allows for increased specialization, and specialization leads to more enhancement, more productivity growth, and productivity growth raises standards of living. So the basic argument in favor of globalization by most trade economists is that it enhances standards of living. Historically, since World War II, there's been huge developments in terms of liberalization of trade in goods and services, several rounds of cuts of tariffs and non-tariff barriers that have clearly led to increased trade around the world, increased specialization, and there's some strong empirical evidence that this has enhanced standards of living. And the same goes with capital flows. Those have been tremendously restricted. And a lot of that has been, as Freeman notes, as a result of multilateral trade organizations and the IMF trying to liberalize those flows. That said, immigration has not been subject as much to multilateral organizations. Immigration policies are still very much the domain of national governments. A lot of those policies, including U.S. policies on immigration, are very much unrelated to economic decisions. Our own immigration policy in the United States is based more upon family considerations, which are viable considerations. But those don't necessarily lead to the same outcomes as what might be overall economically best for world markets. One evidence of that there is probably more restrictions on immigrant flows than trade and capital flows in the world, which Freeman points to, which I think is an excellent point that he brings up, which is he looks at relative prices. In a world where there's free trade in goods and services and capital mobility and migrant mobility, the prices of all those goods and services and factors would be, in theory, the same. However, what we find is, because of those liberalizations in trade and capital, the relative prices of goods in terms of the highest, say, 20th percentile countries, it's only about 2-to-1 relative to the lowest 20th percentile, whereas in terms of wages of workers around the world, there's much more disparity in workers' wages, and that partly reflects the higher restrictions that exist on immigrants and migration around the world.
What would you say are the most noteworthy facts that Freeman presents about the flows of people from developing countries to advanced economies? Is there anything particularly notable about the flow from Mexico to the U.S., perhaps in the context of past immigration patterns in the U.S.?
What Freeman points out to, and does an excellent job, is that he highlights the two great immigrations that are going on. We're all fairly well aware of the massive migration of workers from Europe in the turn of the last century, early 1900s. In fact, at that time, what he highlights is that the number of immigrants that we had into the United States around 1990 is about the same as what it was around 1890 or 1900, 100 years ago. Yet, of course, the population in the United States is about three times what it was today relative to 100 years ago. So that a notable fact is that as a share of our population in the United States, right now, immigration is only about one-third what it used to be. Nevertheless, this is a very important debate because it had gotten to an even smaller share about 30 years ago in 1970. So part of the rise in this debate about immigration is really the last 30 years there has been a notable rise, and in fact roughly a doubling of the share of immigrants in relative to the population in the United States, and this has been a source of concern. An important fact that Freeman points out, and something that most people are well aware, and as I mentioned in response to the last question, is there are huge wage disparities around the world, even adjusted for price differences across countries. Freeman points out that the wage of the average worker, Mexican worker in the United States, is about $11 an hour, whereas the wage of a Mexican worker in Mexico is about $2 an hour. So this is a six-fold difference, and it's that huge disparity in per capita incomes and real wage rates that causes workers to move from Mexico to the United States. But this is something we find throughout the literature. this was clearly a factor 100 years ago in the Great Migration from Europe into the United States. This is true in migrations going on today in Europe, in terms of migrations from the Middle East and Eastern Europe into Western Europe. So this is a systematic pattern that we face. In terms of U.S.-Mexico in particular, there has been a big change in terms of the origin of migrants coming to the United States. And in just recent years, probably Mexican immigrants make up about half of that migration. Does that make economic sense? Actually, the economist will tell you it makes a lot of sense for a couple of reasons. First of all, the U.S. is an enormous market, one of the biggest markets, if not the biggest market in the world, and that means a large number of potential jobs that are attractive to potential migrants. Second, the disparity in per capita incomes and real wage rates between the two countries is quite large, as I just mentioned, and that is a huge motivation for migration. Third, we're very close to Mexico, which makes it very easy sharing a common land border to come across. That, along with the fourth factor, which is very important, the policy considerations. Estimates of enforcement suggest that there is some laxness in terms of enforcement of the current policies. And so these things combined, these four factors, lead to a tremendous migration from Mexico into the United States.
Does Freeman wind up arguing that increased immigration into the U.S. would be desirable or not? What benefits would the entire country see, and who would gain and who would lose the most?
I think on net, Freeman is fairly positive that immigration would be desirable. We can look at it both from a national viewpoint as well as an international one. On an international level, one thing he mentions is that given this huge disparity in wages around the world, that as workers are allowed to move from one country to the next, that's going to tend to reduce the amount of income inequality around the world, which would tend to be a good thing that he favors. On a national level, there are some conflicting issues. The first is in terms of consumers. In some sense, we all benefit as consumers because if goods are being more efficiently produced and factories are allowed to move where they can be most efficiently used, then what's going to happen is that's going to make the cost of producing goods and services lower, and that raises consumers' welfare. So it makes the price of shirts and other items that we commonly consume much cheaper and raises our standards of living. However, in terms of workers, there are winners and losers. A lot of current immigrants, as we talked about, are coming from Mexico, about half of U.S. immigration. And those immigrants tend to be less skilled and less educated than the overall workforce. So what they can tend to do is increase the supply of workers, of unskilled workers. These are the workers at the lower end of the pay scale, and there is a tendency for their real wage rates to fall. And this is clearly a concern. One of the issues of concern throughout our economy is this anxiety about the lack of rise of standards of living for many workers. Although immigration may be one channel influencing this as well as trade, there are other factors going on as well, such as technological advance, which tends to favor skilled workers. So unskilled workers, uneducated workers in the United States are potentially at risk for real wage losses. And there is some evidence that their real wage rates, real incomes can go down. Empirically speaking, two factors Freeman mentions are very important. One is how much do they go down? Most of the evidence is that fall in real wages, as best as we can estimate it, and sharp empirical evidence on this is still elusive, is that those falls are fairly small, but this is still an issue being debated. The other factor is that when immigrants come in, to the extent that they complement, they help make other workers, native workers, more productive. For example, myself as a researcher, if we bring in a certain immigrant from Mexico who makes my teaching and my research more productive, that tends to raise my standard of living, my productivity, and this helps in the economy at large. And there is some strong empirical evidence that the addition of workers from other countries, migrants to this economy, can help real wages. But Friedman is fairly balanced about saying that there's ambiguity about this issue.
One way to make immigration into the U.S. more appealing to U.S. natives might be the, quote, radically economic, close quote, policy of making immigrants pay more to come here and then to take these revenues and apply them somehow to benefit the native population. Is this feasible? Is it truly radical?
I think this concluding section of Friedman's article talking about policies is really an interesting one. It's radical relative to what we currently have, although we have to keep in mind that, as I mentioned earlier, immigration policies are very nationally specific, so there's a huge variation around countries in the world in terms of how immigrants are let into the country in terms of the numbers. In our particular country, in the United States, immigration policy is heavily tied to family relationships, immediate relatives and less immediate relatives. But so this is radical in the sense of let's make immigration more related to who's willing to pay for coming into the country. So it does sound radical on the surface of it. However, what it's doing is basically, to an economist, it's actually not a very radical policy. It actually makes a lot of sense, because what it's saying is basically, let's let this policy be influenced by people's willingness to pay to come in. We do this for most aspects of life. What we acquire in terms of goods is what we're willing to pay for. People make different decisions. So there's certainly an element of economic sense to the argument. The other thing is it radical relative to other policies that we make for allocating quotas? And actually, an interesting concept to consider is that there's been a tremendous change in terms of how we handle environmental policy. There's been enormous growth in recent decades in the use of markets among firms in order to allocate emissions of carbon dioxide and other elements that can influence our environment, and you know, so-called bad emissions. So it allows some firms to sell their rights to others, so we can actually lower emissions levels. So it's relying upon markets. So in some sense, it would be very consistent with how we're in fact approaching environmental concerns in terms of trying to allocate immigrants. It doesn't mean we should preclude those social considerations, those family considerations. There are clearly non-economic elements that are relevant to the immigration debate. I mean, Friedman's article, the title of it, People Flows, is very much a stark economic concept, and it tends to ignore some of these things. But what Friedman is trying to present is really just an economic explanation and policy recommendations based upon economic considerations, although we have to, as intelligent individuals, take these considerations into account as well as numerous other considerations such as family issues, Catholic social thought issues, and like issues.
How should students approach this article and use it to make judgments about immigration pros and cons?
I think there's four things to consider as the students approach this article and read it. And the first thing is one of the great benefits of the article is that it takes the debate about immigration just beyond our immediate concern. The U.S.-Mexico immigration issue is a very important one. But immigration is part of a global phenomenon, and that needs to be constantly considered, that immigration is just one of the many ways in which we continue to globalize our economy. And a global economy can, in principle, lead to a much more peaceful world, can lead to a much more productive world in terms of standards of living. That said, there's a lot of ambiguity in the debate. There are going to be some losers, there are going to be some winners. The empirical evidence is still out in terms of how much those negative impacts are, and even if they do exist. So we need to keep an open view, and I think Friedman presents a balanced view that there's uncertainty about the impacts of this. One thing I haven't mentioned, which he addresses a little bit about, is also the fiscal impacts. One thing we have a concern with many states, especially along the Mexico-U.S. border, are faced with increasing governmental expenditures, school expenditures, health expenditures associated with immigrants and many illegal immigrants. Yet we also have to keep in mind that these immigrants pay taxes as well, and many will not receive, say, Social Security taxes, even though they're paying those things. And again, there's ambiguity. Some studies have found that on net, immigration helps our fiscal situation in the United States, and some have found that on net it hurts it. So again, the debate still has much to find. Finally, very important to keep in mind in reading this article is, as the title suggests, people flows in globalization. This is just very much an economic argument. It's one that should be read as part of an overall view and study of the immigration debate. And the immigration debate is about people, and people are not just flows. People are human beings, obviously, and Catholic social thought and ethical considerations, factors which will be addressed in other articles in this series, play a very important role. And we have to balance these considerations against the economic ones that Freeman addresses in this article.
This has been a Notre Dame Forum podcast. For more, visit the forum online at forum.nd.edu.